Hey everybody, this is Jeff Moore at Independent Sector. Welcome to our check-in call. Before I go any further, let me just double check. Nick and Wes, are you guys on the line from Washington Council? Since you're first up on the agenda, want to make sure.
We are here.
Yes, we are. Hear us?
Awesome, terrific, great. Thank you guys. Again, thanks all. We have quite a list of folks on the line today, as we did earlier in the week. At the end of this conversation, we will push out an email to everyone with this deck included. And with that, let me just remind a few housekeeping rules. If you can keep your phone on mute as we go, that's great. Reduces the background noise. I've already mentioned that we'll be pushing out an email at the end of the call. Let me turn quickly to Dan just to open us up, has been our practice here, and then over to Washington Council for the first item on our agenda, which is here.
So thank you, Jeff. And thanks to everybody for getting on the line. It's great to see we have, again, a very strong turnout, which is, I think, needed now more than ever. We have quite a challenge in front of us, given the what we're seeing from the House and what it looks like we're going to be seeing from the Senate. We just got a little bit of background noise there. So I just want to rally us. I think we're going to have to speak as strongly and as unifiedly as we possibly can, realizing that we're never going to get perfect alignment. There's a fair amount of alignment on a number of the very big issues. So big shout out to our colleagues, Philanthropy Roundtable, Council Foundations, National Council of Nonprofits, who've been just terrific to work with. And I think we've been able to, in a differentiated way, along with the Coalition for Charitable Giving, really push hard to have our voice really make a difference. Not quite enough yet, but I'm certainly not giving up any fight, and I know the folks on the phone aren't either. So with that, I'll turn it over to our brain trust at Washington Council.
All right, Dan, thank you. This is Nick, and Wes is here with me. And I guess, Jeff, the way we had talked about it, maybe just at a high level, give folks, I think most people on the phone probably are aware of all this, but kind of just a level set on where we are from a process standpoint, and then go ahead and proceed into the rest of the agenda. Is that how you would like to do it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So everybody should see a slide that gives that kind of scaffolding, Nick, high level process where we are, quick recap of what's come out, and then we'll step into questions, concerns, et cetera, from there.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and start off, and then Wes will chime in here as well. So everybody is aware that the House did pass the bill yesterday. The bill that was approved by the House is identical to the bill that came out of the House Ways and Means Committee on November 9th. There were no changes made between the time it came from the committee and the vote yesterday. The vote was a strict party line, no Democrats voting for the bill. 13 Republicans voted no, and with the exception of Walter Jones from North Carolina, all of the no votes came from high tax states, New York, New Jersey, and California. Of course, a number of Republican members from those states did vote for the bill, and all of the votes, with the exception of Jones, I'm not sure exactly why he voted against it, but the others clearly voted against it because of the limitation on the state and local tax deduction. The House bill limits that deduction to $10,000 of property taxes, so basically completely eliminates the deduction for all state and local income taxes. So the House process is completed. In the Senate, late last night, the Senate Finance Committee, on a party line vote, approved their version of the tax reform bill. Right before the final vote, a second modification from Chairman Hatch was approved by the committee. That modification, I don't know, Wes, had much, it had a change in the excise tax on investment income of private colleges and universities, But otherwise, I'm not sure it had much in the way of changes that pertain to the sector. And you concur with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, so we don't have a final score yet on the bill as fully modified. We should be seeing that from the Joint Tax Committee today, and we should get a final description of the bill as approved by the committee. Now, many of you are probably aware that the Finance Committee does not mark up a bill using legislative text. It's a longstanding convention that the committee has used. That obviously means that we have yet to see the legislative language associated with the bill that they've approved. The staffs will continue to work on that language, and I would suspect that we might see the legislative text sometime during the course of next week, or if not, certainly on Monday the 27th, because that they need that language to take the next steps in the process. And I don't know, Wes, do you want to take us through the next steps in the Senate?
Yeah, for the Senate process here, given the bill we're out last night under the reconciliation rules, there is a process to have to go through on the Senate floor to combine the reconciliation instructions in the budget earlier this year had in their instructions to the Senate Finance Committee to produce a tax bill, and the Senate Energy Committee to produce a bill dealing with ANWR to save about $1 billion in savings from the revenue from that change in the law. They'll have to combine those two bills together. Traditional process for that is to go to the Senate Budget Committee first, where they combine the bills together into one reconciliation bill and report it back out, and then go to the Senate floor. They could potentially bypass that process and just go to the Senate floor by calling it the House bill, H.R. 1, that's passed the House, and then amend that bill with the both the Senate Finance Committee report out packages and the Senate Energy Committee provisions as one amendment or two amendments to the House passed bill. We expect that to take place when we get back from Thanksgiving break on November 27th and 28th. And that week is dedicated, as I understand it, to process the reconciliation bill, which I think has 30 hours of debate or 20 hours of debate for the bill and unlimited amendments to the package. But at some point they'll, you know, tire of doing amendments, and the bill will be subject to a final vote. But it could be a voterama type experience like we had with the budget resolution, where you have a series of quickly discussed and then voted on amendments at the final end of the process. But the expectation is they get the bill done on the Senate floor that Tuesday, then get back potentially, and then move it through by the end of that week.
Yeah, I think Leader McConnell has his staff that they should expect that they will try to get the bill finished Thursday night of that week, or, you know, maybe early Friday morning, but that the so-called voterama would probably take place Thursday night, Friday morning, with the goal of having the bill off of the Senate floor by December 1st. Now, of course, that means that they need to make sure they have the 50 votes for it. And as we've seen during the week this week, one or two senators can cause a bit of havoc on that. They really don't know at this point where some of these senators are going to be on this bill that's cleared the Finance Committee. So it's not at all certain that they have the 50 votes locked down at this point. If they are able to finish the bill in the Senate by December 1st, we understand from talking with the Speaker's staff that the goal that they have is to try to see if they can come up with a completed product on or before December 8th. And part of the reason for that is that on December 8th, the funding for the federal government expires, and they're going to have to either have a short-term spending resolution to extend that funding, or have a more comprehensive bill worked out. I think the idea is to try to finish the tax bill and then get into a discussion about how to deal with the spending issues. Whether or not they have a full conference of some sort is a question that's being talked about. People looked at the procedure that was used on the budget resolution and are wondering if it's possible to be done on the tax bill. And what that is an effort by the Senate right at the end of their process to try to make a bill look more like the House bill, or make changes to bring the bill closer to the House bill. For example, on the state and local tax reduction, that would be an issue where the House is going to need something that the Senate package right now has full repeal of that deduction. So we don't know how they're going to handle that. Speaker Ryan is appropriately saying publicly and privately to his members and to the press that, of course, we're going to have a conference, but I think that is to be determined see how much of a struggle it is for them to get 50 votes if they can get it, and do they want to risk going back to the Senate a second time? I don't think we know the answer to that question. Is it all possible that this can slow down and you know, maybe have to morph into next year? Sure, that's certainly possible. But as you see from the rush over the last few weeks, I think that they are really pushing to try to get this done before the end of the year. It makes our challenge, Jeff and Dan, I think, you know, even more significant. But there will be, I think there's going to be amendments on the Senate floor that will get made to the bill. Some of them may be manager's amendments. There are things coming out of committee that clearly need to be addressed, that the Republican members, even last night before they finished, said we'll have to deal with this on the floor. But a lot of that will probably be done behind the scenes in manager's amendments of sort. I think that there'll probably be a pretty big push by the leadership and by the committee leadership not to be actually having a lot of one-off amendments that are agreed to on the Senate floor, but rather control it through a manager's amendment process.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, that was a question I was going to ask about what our read was in terms of the amendment process on the Senate floor. I know we're going to come back to this. I assume many on the call have very specific questions or thoughts about a potential Lankford amendment, where we stand on that, on the universal. We'll come back to that in a moment. Two things. One, we saw a note come up on the screen that some folks were having a hard time hearing Nick. We're hearing him just fine. Let us know in the chat room if you're continuing to have problems with the audio, and we'll do our best to address them. In the meantime, Nick, Wes, like to open it up. If there are any questions for the Washington Council, Ernst & Young team around, you know, process, where we are, what we expect, timing, this is the time to ask. And I'll do my best to moderate here with over 90 folks on the line. So, questions?
I have a question. This is Mark McCauley with DMA Nonprofit Federation. Nick, I'm delighted you're on the case. You're one of the best in the city. I have a quick question on process and Senate finance. Universal Charitable Amendment went down last night, as all Democratic amendments did. Was there a specific offset to cover the universal charitable deduction when they offered it last night?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It was kind of a blur, but I believe that if I'm right, that Senator Stabenow had proposed reinstating the corporate alternative minimum tax as the offset. In fact, Senator Portman, in his response and kind of rebuttal to Stabenow, mentioned that he had concerns about the offset. He also he didn't really defend the package as much as he simply stated that, well, we do retain the charitable deduction. But I think, Mark, I think it was the corporate AMT. We'll double check that to be sure. But I do recall Portman specifically addressing that, and that would not be an acceptable offset, at least to him.
And a very quick follow-up. When they score the second modification, we'll find it out next day or two, is it your guess, and I know this is just a guess, that it'll score under $1.5 trillion over 10 years, so they have wiggle room for future manager's amendments and additional?
Yes, I believe that's the case. There was some thought in the room last night at the markup that the modification that they were putting forward was designed to be fairly close to a revenue neutral modification. So they had some provisions that would lose money. They clearly had a couple of provisions that would raise money. There was confusion over one dealing with net operating losses. So yeah, Mark, I think that they clearly, the committee, part of what their clear goal here was, and really their directive, they really have to be under that 1.5 trillion number. Otherwise, the bill would be subject to a point of order. They wouldn't meet their reconciliation instruction. So I would think that, yes, it'll be, you know, maybe they were about 80 so some billion under through the first modification. And I would expect that they'll be under as well after the second one.
Yep. I agree. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Let me turn to some questions that are coming in on the chat page. And just a reminder to mute your lines if you're not speaking. Okay. Again, just please to mute. Big West, a question about the removal of the mandate. And you know, Murkowski, I guess, today has come out and said she's against mandate repeal. Question about Collins, and just any thoughts about how that is all going to play in how this rolls out as we get to the floor?
Yeah, I think that addition in the Finance Committee was pushed by obviously the President and others on the right, the Republican Party. Senator Collins has shown some concern for doing the individual mandate as part of this bill. I don't think she's come out and said she'll vote against it. I think that they tried to use some of the funds that were raised by the individual mandate repeal in the package to help increase the tax cuts for middle-class taxpayers, which was partly to help give something to Senator Collins and others who might have concern about the individual mandate repeal. So I think it's still an open question. Is that enough for her to be for the bill? It's yet to be seen. We'll kind of get that information, I think, come out over the next couple, 2 weeks or so when it goes to the floor. For Senator Murkowski, I did not know that she would say that about individual mandate. I can see her having the same concerns that Senator Collins has. However, given that she's the chairman of the Energy Committee and report out the portion on ANWR, I thought that she would be likely to be supportive of the overall package with that included in there. So I'd be a little surprised if Senator Murkowski is close to a no vote as it goes through. She might raise some concerns about some things, but at the end of the day, I think she'd probably be a yes on the overall package, which includes her provisions on ANWR. But that's still kind of what the process is going to take over the next couple of days as they talk to off-committee members and they look at the package and say, is this good enough to get your vote? Some members, such as Senator Johnson, has already raised concerns about some of the pass-through small business provisions and not being sufficient for him. But I think they're trying to work out, as Nick said, some ways to change the bill, modify it, a little extra revenue they have in the package to pacify some of those concerns to get the 50 votes they need for the package. I think a couple other votes that are kind of uncertain is Senator McCain and Senator Flake from Arizona. Unclear what they might do. There have been some concerns about the deficit impact from their standpoint. Senator Corker from Tennessee has also raised concerns about the deficit impact. We'll see what he does and what he says going forward. But okay. In the exercise here with Senator McConnell is try to get the votes when they go to the floor the week after Thanksgiving. I think they're trying to get there, and I think they'll look like they're kind of they'll be close.
Yep.
They're trying to get that number.
Thanks, Wes. There's a question about the Lankford Amendment, and we're going to come to that later on in the conversation. Just very quickly, Senator Lankford, Oklahoma, has introduced freestanding legislation that mirrors the Walker bill on the House side. This is for a universal deduction with cap. We'll come back to it in a little bit around the strategy surrounding Lankford and whether or not we are moving forward or can expect to see anything moving forward there. And hopefully we'll have some folks on the line, Brian Walsh and others, who can speak to that. One request that has come in, and we'll take this up, providing kind of a quick tick sheet to everybody on the call around what the key dates are that we see over the course of the next couple of weeks. So, you know, Wes, you just alluded to week after Thanksgiving. I thought I heard Nick say by Thursday of that week, the bill is on the Senate floor for vote. But we will put out some kind of a tick sheet as best we understand it at any given point in time. Okay, any other, before I move us on, because we've only got an hour and a lot to cover, is there anything else that's really pressing for Wes and Nick? I see a question. If the bill goes to the Budget Committee, any sense if there will be an opportunity for further amendments in Budget Committee?
No. It's a perfunctory step. They just take the Energy Committee bill and the Finance Committee bill,
kind of staple them together and send it to the floor. So no opportunity for amendment.
Got it. Thank you. Okay, one last chance for additional questions. If not, I'm going to push us forward. Okay, let's push on to the next slide. And Jamie, I'm going to ask you, I know that WEIS have just posted a quick update to the Senate summary available on the IS website. We'll give you the link at the back end of this deck. I think we're all pretty well aware of what our major concerns are with the bill. If you want to do a very high fly of what you updated over the evening last night, and then we can talk quickly about whether or not there is any sort of reprioritization among this community around those concerns. And to the third question, are there any knowledge gaps that we have now that we're looking at the Senate bill out of committee? Are there any data gaps, things that we need to actually further refine our arguments around provisions of the bill? So Jamie, do you want to do a quick fly?
Yes, thanks, Jeff, and I'll be brief. I know a number of folks on the call are following various provisions, and I would call this an example of the somewhat good, bad, and the ugly of what we saw come out of committee last night. I think in terms of the good, for those of you who have been following the Johnson Amendment process very closely, the fact that there are no Johnson Amendment-related provisions in the Senate Finance Bill is certainly encouraging moving forward. You know, we discussed it a bit about where the charitable deduction stands. Obviously, we were not successful on a non-itemizer universal deduction amendment through Senators Wyden and Stabenow. We do know, and we'll talk in a bit more detail shortly, that Senator Lankford was hopeful and it was, you know, attempting to push folks on the committee on the Republican side to potentially introduce that language as part of the process. That may have happened a bit too late. There could still be opportunities as this moves to the floor to be able to continue to push that for charitable giving. I will say one of the more interesting things before ticking off a couple of other quick provisions is that on the individual side, one of the changes made is that a lot of these individual provisions will sunset after 2025. So that includes the doubling of the standard deduction. That includes the changes made to doubling the threshold of the estate tax. That also includes the increase of the AGI limits for charitable giving for cash contributions from 50% to 60% as part of this. So a good number of items we were following on the individual side would now have a sunset in order to meet some revenue targets moving forward. I know a number of you, we've talked over the past week or so, we're very concerned with what is known as the royalties provision in the legislation. What this would do as part of the unrelated business income tax would reclassify income from licensing a charity's name or logo and make that subject to UBIT. There, as far as we know, not any formal attempts to have that language removed or modified as part of the committee process. This is another thing to talk about is potential activity as we move to the floor, but I know that as a big concern for a number of organizations and we continue to monitor. We'll say that the language around executive compensation, similar to what we saw in the House, we're fortunate not to see any language around private activity bonds in the Senate on the Senate side, a bit smaller in scope in terms of how it approached a number of the charitable provisions we did see in the House. So I'll stop there. I know, again, a number of you have very specific provisions you've been following, and would love to talk about those. And if there's any other context we can provide, we're happy to do that.
Thank you, Jamie. So I'll turn it back to all of you on the phone. Again, if there is anything around particular provision that is not clear, this is a good opportunity to raise that. Any thoughts around where there is information that is missing, information that we need to further clarify position, this is also a good time to raise that. Any questions for Jamie? Neil, I see, Neil Denton, I see a question that you have raised, and we're going to come to that on the next slide.
You can press star 6 to unmute yourself if you'd like to ask out loud as well.
Thanks. Thanks, Brenna, for that reminder. Okay, so from an IS perspective, our messaging, our concern continues to be on the whole of the bill and the whole of its impact on the sector. As we have throughout the course of this process, I mean, we have gone very deep on the universal and on Johnson Amendment and on estate tax. We have very real concerns around the UBIC provisions. And so we will continue to push messaging that covers that waterfront. Know that many of you on the call are more narrowly focused, and that's terrific. If you sense that as you hear our messaging, see our messaging, that we're not addressing critical issues of concern for you, please make us aware. Okay, we think we've got the territory pretty well covered, but it's for you to tell us that, to affirm that. Okay, I'm going to push us on to the next slide. Oops. Around legislative strategies. So the Senate amendment strategy question, this comes back to Lankford. Brian Walsh, are you on the line? Or Sue Santa, are you on the line? Anybody who can share any additional information around where we are with Senator Lankford? Again, Senator Lankford has introduced freestanding legislation that mirrors the Walker bill that was introduced in the House some weeks ago. And the hope has been, Jamie alluded to this earlier, that Senator Lankford would be able to mobilize Republicans on Senate Finance to get them to push Lankford language as an amendment. That did not happen. There is still opportunity for Lankford to bring his language forward as a floor amendment, whether it's part of a manager's amendment or whatever, to be determined. But that's really the issue at play right now, is around the universal. Brian, Sue, Sandra, anybody else on the line that can offer update?
This is Sue. I am online.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. And thank you for convening this call. It's great. So on Lankford and Walker, obviously they both have freestanding bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, and the language is identical. And there has been continuing conversation and outreach with both offices. And while we were initially sensing maybe some reluctance from Lankford, what we're interpreting now is that while the markup process was going on, he may have been kind of just keeping the powder dry, if you will, trying to think through a strategy after the markup. He does still seem enthusiastic and committed to the idea of a universal deduction, as does Mr. Walker and his staff. So remains to be seen exactly how that plays out, but the strategy that we're strongly encouraging is getting word into both of those offices, really from the constituent side, and as much as possible from a, you know, CEO, a leader level, directly to the senator and the congressman, to continue to push very hard on trying to see how that can be positioned. So, you know, we look for any glimmers of any hope we might have, and that still does seem to be some level of possibility. And then, Jeff, we can talk probably later in the call just about what a grassroots strategy does look like for the week of Thanksgiving.
That's right. We'll come back to that. Thanks.
Okay.
And thanks for the continuing work of the Charitable Giving Coalition. Other Brian, anything, if you're on the line, Brian Walsh, Faith in Giving, anything more to add? And just ask, please remember to put your phone on mute when you're typing. Thanks. Anything else on Senate amendments? Lankford, anything else that is brewing? is there any reason to believe that there might be something that would come, you know, in either a bipartisan amendment that Stabenow would somehow come back into this process? I mean, the amendment went down obviously on a party line vote. Do we expect her to be a player? Is there anything we should be asking of Senator Stabenow in particular around Senate amendment? I open that question to the group.
This is Greg, and ideally, I mean, Stabenow did the amendment with Wyden, and obviously if you can get Wyden to carry, you know, engagement on this, that's going to carry a lot more weight than what it would be with Stabenow, you know, being the lead. And the other thing on that is obviously you've got several members on the Republican side that had, you know, various charitable giving related amendments that they had filed. And obviously those would be, you know, likely suspects to be trying to work with in a bipartisan fashion. Thune, Roberts actually had a couple of amendments, you know, that touched on charitable giving and so on. So.
Yep. Thank you.
Hey, Jeff, this is Nick and Wes. Yeah. We just want to comment that it's our expectation that you're not going to see a lot of bipartisanship on the floor with respect to this bill.
Yeah.
And so our expectation would be that it's very unlikely that you're going to see a Stabenow Thune amendment on, you know, the universal deduction or some other type of change, that this is really going to have to be driven by Republican senators. You know, we'd like to hope that there could be some bipartisanship, but I don't think we should count on that at all. I think our strategy has to be focused on Republicans.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I would just add to that, agree to that comment from Nick, but also get, you know, Senator Lankford and kind of work with his office if we want to, you know, join with, you know, I think that the view would be to find other Republican senators that obviously are off committee. And the committee folks are good as well. Like Senator Roberts, I think are good suggestions, but they've already gone through the process of the committee process. They'll vote for the bill. We need to think about some members who might be a little more on the bubble and say, look, you know, my vote is more contingent upon getting some modifications to this this package, and here's some things that I would like to see put in the bill and added. And that would, you know, be, I'm not sure if Senator Lankford's in that category, and hopefully he will be forceful on this issue and say, this is important for me for my vote, but also, you know, Senator Collins, maybe Senator Flake and others. I'm not sure what Senator Inhofe is from Oklahoma, who's, you know, fellow Oklahoman for Senator Lankford. But other kind of those folks, I think, in that category of other Republicans that might be inclined to support this, to say to Senator Hatch and Senator McConnell, this is important. Let's get this done. And I'm with Senator Lankford.
Yep. Thanks, Washington Council, for reminding us of the political realities. Right, message clear that heavy focus on Republicans. There's a question about whether or not Lankford has been scored. I know that we have put a request in for JCT scoring of Lankford. I suspect others have as well. I don't believe that has happened yet. Somebody, do I stand corrected? Any other information on JCT scoring on Lankford? Jamie, I know we put that request in, right?
Yes, there was some information. I spoke to Walker's staff late yesterday to ask if it was scored, and of course, it's the identical bill. They're still at the bottom of the stack at Joint Committee. Yep. Now, maybe Lankford is in a position to expedite a little faster.
I think Mark and Jeff, that what's going to happen here and the way it'll work is JCT's got to spend the next, you know, few days finishing up on the Senate bill. They're going to have to help write the report and all that. When they get to the Senate floor, there's going to be, you know, if Lankford says, I'm really serious about this amendment and I want to push it, they're going to have to score it. And that's how the priority will get determined.
Yep.
I think just, you know, randomly asking for the scores at this point aren't going to help. But
if it's, he should
submit it. Yeah.
The question. And then, you know, he needs to also let his intentions known to leadership and to Hatch that he's interested in this, and maybe they can help expedite this.
They will.
As well.
Yeah, all the more reason that the message is, you know, all roads kind of leading to Lankford in many ways, right? That making the intent clear, if it in fact is his intent, to push this on the floor as an amendment. That is what is going to help us get to the top of the heap in terms of scoring. I want to ask also about floor statements. We had talked, I think, Sue, it was in a Charitable Giving Coalition call about reaching out for coordinated floor statements and specifically whether or not we could get some commitment out of Senator Lankford to go to the floor. He was not going to do that, our sense was, while the bill was still in committee. Anything more to report on that? Obviously, they're out next week. Anything more to report?
Jeff, I don't have anything further on that, but we do have a Charitable Giving Coalition call later this afternoon, so there may be some intelligence coming out of that.
That's great. Good. And we'll be sure to share that back. Okay, Neil Denton, I know you asked a question about whether or not we should be now going back to expected Ways and Means House conferees on issues of critical interest, anticipating conference. Again, you know, there's a bit of an open question there, but did you want to pose your question? This was really to Nick and to Wes, I believe, right?
Yeah, Neil here. Nick, I'd be curious to know, is this a good opportunity if we can take a best guess at who we expect the conferees to be to get messages back into them too?
Well, sure. I mean, I think obviously the Senate floor is the priority, Neil, but sure. I think nothing's going to happen here from a House standpoint unless Paul Ryan and Kevin Brady and somebody in the leadership wants it to happen. And so I think it's important. You know, we can find members that can be willing to communicate to them their desire to see some type of a change in an ultimate product, that would be very helpful. It doesn't even have to be limited to people that might be a conferee or not. Because ultimately, in my view, this is going to get negotiated, whatever the final product is going to look at like, and however they're going to get to it, it's going to be negotiated by basically the big six that put the framework together, right? That's ultimately the small room. And so getting to them is going to be important. So I wouldn't even limit it to who we think might be a conferee. We can certainly get people to weigh in that they want to see a change with respect to this. Walker obviously is a big voice here, and getting him to continue to weigh in would be very helpful.
Thanks, Nick. Any other questions on amendment strategies, floor statements, anticipation of conference, what we continue to do vis-a-vis the House in the interim? If not, I'm going to move us on.
I had a quick question on the UBIT royalty issue. This is Lauren Mehta from Wounded Warrior Project. Hey there. I know this is something that's kind of, at least from our perspective, popped up relatively quickly. I was just wondering if anyone on the call had intel about if anyone is working on an amendment related to this. I know that ASAE, the associations, have been lobbying it pretty hard. So I just didn't know if anyone had intel on whether their efforts have borne any fruit.
Jamie, any word that you have been picking up? I know you and Allison both have been tracking this, or Nick, Wes, others.
We have not seen any activity around a possible amendment for that provision from our perspective. That doesn't mean there isn't one, but we haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I would say the same, Jeff. We've been tracking a bit, but no champions for an amendment have emerged as of yet.
As of yet. Okay. All right.
Got it.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to push us on. So media and grassroots mobilization, we have talked a fair amount as a community and various coalitions around what our key messaging needs to be through the various stages of this process. And so we've been thinking a fair amount around, you know, as we go into Thanksgiving week, what our messaging needs to be. We'll talk a little bit about that at the back end and what we're doing right now with updates to the our call to action center. Let me turn to Christina here at IS just for kind of a quick overview of what we've been thinking about in terms of key messaging and key targets for that messaging. And then again, I want to open it up so that we learn what we're all thinking. Christina?
Sure. Hi. So we have been obviously in regular communication with our media contacts around what we are seeing here and what our statements are, primarily focusing on obviously trade publications, but also tax reporters nationwide and all the mass media. So we continue to do that and will continue to do that through this process. We're also, we have an editorial strategy to try to get some opinion pieces out there, both from, we're writing letters to the editors. For example, we wrote one to the Wall Street Journal last week based on their editorial. It didn't get published, but we are, you know, we're trying. And then on the opinion side, we're going to have an opinion piece in The Hill on the Johnson Amendment. So, you know, we're continuing to look for those opportunities and definitely want to connect with communications folks from other organizations. If you guys, you know, have ideas of partnering up or getting, you know, two CEOs to have a double byline on editorial pieces, we're open to those. So please let us know. And then going into the next week, we're going to see if we can aim a little higher with some of the, you know, big players, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. It's just a matter of trying to get through all the noise and all of the, you know, other groups and their angles. So we're going to keep hitting them and keep connecting. And I'm happy to be in communication with other communications professionals from all the groups that are on the call.
So, Christina, it's fair to say that one of the things that we have been doing as we have kind of inched forward here is continuing to turn up the flame.
Yeah, absolutely.
Around not only the urgency, but the very clear damage these bills, to include the Senate bill, will do to the sector. And leaving no doubt as to the nature of our concern, the depth of our concern, and continuing to beat that drum. And I think that's an important thing for us to be thinking about over the course of the next week as members and senators are back in their districts, et cetera, that this, we cannot afford to be going quiet. Obviously, we don't know what's coming out of the Senate ultimately yet, but there is very clear messaging that we're taking forward over the course of this week. Before we turn to calls to action, any other thoughts around messaging, key media targets, things you're working on for placement, things that have recently been placed?
Hi, this is Nina with Americans for the Arts.
Hi, Nina.
And hi there. I have a question around messaging. I want to know if there has been any polling, public opinion conducted, asking the general public how much of an influence or a factor the charitable tax deduction is on whether they give or how much they give. Because the number one argument that we receive from members is that we don't think, what they'll say is, we don't think that the tax deduction is going to make a difference on whether someone
gives to. Nina, we just lost the last part of your question there. Can you repeat the last part, the last couple of sentences?
Sure. What I was sharing is the common response that I get from directly from members when I bring up the issue of the charitable deduction and what is at risk. They quickly dismiss it and say, we don't think that people will stop giving to charities just because they don't have the tax deduction incentive anymore. So my question is, do we have any kind of public opinion work that's been done on this to show that they're actually, that people might have a change in giving? I know that there's the work of the
research,
right? How much could be lost.
Yeah.
But this is more opinion related.
So this is Christina Arias. I think the interesting part about that is, if, you know, we've done polling about whether people want to expand the charitable deduction. So if you don't have that, we can definitely send that to you. And so we do find support for expansion of the charitable deduction. But if you ask people whether they will give based on a tax incentive, they will probably say no, because they want to be seen as, you know, very good people who give out of the kindness of their heart and not because they get some sort of tax incentive. But research shows that it actually does impact the amount people give. So that's where the opinion piece is a little harder to use as a gauge, because people might not want to say publicly and out loud that the incentive is going to make them give more to their church. But in actuality, we see that, that's the case.
And your mention of religious givers in particular, the research findings out of Indiana were particularly important there, that religious givers, faith-based givers, in fact, are as sensitive, if not even a little bit more sensitive, to incentives in the tax code. So this notion, you know, that the research has very much debunked this notion. Nina, so I know that we're not giving you the answer that you were looking for. We have not done that public polling research. There are, I think, some fundamental complications around that kind of public polling research. I don't know if anybody else on the line is aware of that research out in the field, that kind of public polling.
And as someone thinks about that, I just wanted to do one little follow-up and say that in a scenario where we don't get a universal deduction in this particular tax bill, which is a strong possibility, I think, I think we should also start thinking about Plan B of getting into a technical corrections bill in 2018 and start to document with all the charities that we represent the difference in how much they're getting in gifts from month to month comparison year to year with when there was a tax deduction.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Nina. I see that there's a question about whether or not can in any way leverage Giving Tuesday, which of course is coming up. We have been doing a fair amount around that very question here at IS. I don't know, Christina, if there's anything more that we can share at this point. We're continuing to explore that. We have a couple of board members who are particularly close to the Giving Tuesday initiative, and so we're thinking that through. We are a little late in the game, I suspect, but we're pushing on that. I'm going to talk about push. I'm going to move us forward. I see that there are questions about providing names of speakers, email contacts, et cetera. Yes, we will make all of that available. Hey, Jamie, can you give us a quick update on where we are in our action center, what we're thinking about in terms of calls to action, and then I want to come back to Sue?
Sure, Jeff, and I will let folks know where we are at the moment. Our action center has been updated as of this morning to be reflective kind of just of what happened in the Senate. The House alert is now down, so it's just solely a Senate alert. What we're thinking in terms of next week being an opportune time when your senators are back at home is to have an alert that allows people to connect directly you know, with their senators and talk about the bill in a bit of a broader scope, encouraging them to consider the impact on charities from all the provisions that we see, and asking specifically for support of an amendment or adjustments to the bill that would strengthen the charitable giving provisions. And we do reference the Lankford bill as part of that call to action. As Jeff noted from the top, this is a bit of a pullback in terms of a broader scope, looking at the bill more holistically and the impact on the sector. But we do think that during this week in particular, as we sort of you know, fall back a bit and think about where we may be going during a floor fight, to give people an opportunity to just speak, you know, very broadly about the bill's impact and allow for some room to talk about specific provisions if they would like. The message will be, you know, you'll be able to edit it if necessary to add some more specifics on kind of a personal or organizational level if you would like. So just taking the opportunity
for next week, and we're going to push that out later this afternoon to get folks just to connect and to level set a bit about what this bill actually means for the charitable community.
Thanks, Jamie. I know, well, I turn to Sue here. You know, we made the point, and Sue made the point on the last call earlier this week, that sharing not only what you're doing in terms of call to action, but the actual language is really important, especially to smaller organizations that both look for a little bit of top cover from larger organizations, giving them some room to step out and to mobilize, as well as just, you know, in terms of the logistics, being able to do a little bit of cut and pasting and lifting good language developed by others is always of value. Sue, do you want to come back to the question of what's happening next week, what Charitable Giving Coalition is hoping is happening by way of calls during Thanksgiving week?
Sure. So I would echo everything that Jamie has said with regard to the strategy directly to senators, and in fact, you know, continuing this the high level of, maybe we'd call it the grass tops approach of leaders, CEOs, directly to senators and chiefs of staff. So all of that remains. The way we think about it is, you know, different layers of what different sort of parts of your organizations can be doing to keep the ball rolling. And so this coming week gives a unique opportunity, it being Thanksgiving and it being a time when we know many House members, many senators will be showing up at the food banks and the, you know, the church basements giving out turkeys and all of those kinds of things. And so the other layer we're just trying to put in here is for those of you that can really get to your grassroots forces out there across the country, some super simple talking points to remind the members when they're there and they're seeing everything happening, why this is so important. And I've shared those with ISI, and I know independent sector has a lot of really easy talking points as well that can be pushed out, so I'm sure that'll get out to everybody. But one thing we heard on our call yesterday from some people reporting back from the field was this reflexive response from both senators and members of the House saying, well, but we've preserved the charitable deduction. And at least at the Charitable Giving Coalition level, you know, we feel it's time for people to say, no, you haven't. You have not preserved the value and scope of the charitable deduction. Here's why, and here's what we stand to lose. Honestly, three or four talking points. And then, of course, if there's more conversation to be had after that, people just need to know who to point to, probably those of you that are on this call. So again, we want to take every opportunity, but next week it's going to be charity in action, you know, at the most grassroots level we can imagine. And so let's take advantage of it and see if we can't try to at least open some eyes to what this means on the ground.
So thanks, Sue. A very quick point. Can you give a one sentence high flyover of the Charitable Giving Coalition? We've got a question that's come in about how folks on the call get connected with you all. And specifically, you know, making sure that the points that you have been developing for next week, messaging next week, are available to everybody on this call.
Sure. Charitable Giving Coalition has been around since the very first proposal to cap the charitable deduction back at about 8 years ago at the beginning of the Obama administration. Jeff, if you could share my email, I'll be sure that people get on the general distribution list. If you would like to add your organization's name to the Charitable Giving Coalition, that would be great. It's important to note it is a single issue coalition, which is centrally focused on preserving the charitable giving incentive. So I'm more than happy to talk offline with people who want more detail, but if you guys could just share my contact info.
We'll do that when we push out the deck after the call.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other questions, thoughts around call to action next week in particular, key messaging, media or otherwise? Again, I think Sue is making the critical point that, as Jamie did, that, you know, as we take a big step back and say, gosh, where is it that we just are not breaking through? It's on this very point that we have House members and senators continuing to say in response to the arguments around the charitable deduction, the universal, look, you really don't need to worry. We preserved the charitable deduction. And, you know, there's a very clear response to that, but I don't think we have uniformly broken through to that line of thinking. So again, Sue, the points that you're raising are very helpful, the points that you can push out, and we'll get your information out after the call. Okay.
Hi, this is Heather with the League of American Orchestras.
Hey, Heather.
Hey, I just wanted to express one more point that folks might hear in response to those requests that our folks are getting just after last night, which is there might be some pushing back and saying it's too late. And so I think we need to just encourage our grassroots and let them know in the best and clearest terms possible that it's not, and where those opportunities are in this legislative process, because they might start hearing back from offices that the ship has already sailed.
Yeah, no, that's right. And we had this conversation internal to IS, all the more reason why mentioning Langford, I mean, that is real, right? And ultimately how he proceeds, if he proceeds in terms of a Senate amendment strategy is to be determined, but that bill is real. So yes, absolutely. It's a Hail Mary and we understand that, but it is not too late. We have to push back on that. Okay. Speaking of too late, we've got about 3 minutes. You'll get all of this, including the links, when we send the deck out after the call. We have updated the Senate summary. News since earlier in the week, there's a link to a letter we sent out to Senate Finance Committee that covers a range of concerns, most of which, if not all of which, we've talked about through the course of this call, as well as some updated Senate talking points for those of you who may have interest in using them. So you'll have these links when we send the deck out. Last slide here, we're not going to spend any time on this now, but we are very anxious, while it is still too early to do a full diagnostic, but we are very anxious to take a step back at some point as a community and sort of think about what we've learned through this process. And then ultimately IS needs to think about what we hear from you and what we indeed could have done better, done differently, or what we've done well through the course of this effort. And so just know that this is something that we are, you know, we're wanting to hear from you. We will build this into the process going forward. Our hope would be that once we get on the other side of the debate and this is settled, however it lands, that we can reconvene this group and have a conversation around these questions and others. Important for public learning. This is, while we may not have tax reform again for a number of years, this is important learning for us. And so to that end, I am going to ask a favor, a small favor. At the end of this call, we are going to send out the deck. As I've mentioned, we're going to send out Sue's contact information to Charitable Giving Coalition. And we are also going to send out like a one question survey, a net promoter score survey. In other words, basically, would you at the end of the day recommend convenings, conversations like the one we've just had, future conversations like the one we've just had to a colleague? So that feedback, it's that simple, really important for independent sector as we think about how we build and improve going forward. So watch for that later in the day today as well. We are just at 1 o'clock. Obviously, we wish all of you, your families, friends, loved ones, happy Thanksgiving. Anything more for the good of the order before we conclude this call? Nick and Wes, a special thanks to you guys. You are a great value add to this conversation. Thanks to to you both for making yourselves available.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Anything else from the group? If not,
Jeff.
Yes, please.
So sorry to do this, but this is Nina again. Because this bill is marketed as something that grows the economy and jobs, what if we turned the net loss that we're talking about, the $20 billion, as to what would be a loss to the number of jobs in the nonprofit arts and the loss in the economic impact as a result of having $20 billion less in revenue for these programs to do services?
Yeah, it's a great question, Nina. You know, 10% of the jobs, right? So are directly attributable to the sector. We have actually started to build some of that messaging into what's going out from IS, the economic impact, the jobs impact messaging. But I think your point is a really good one. And we believe that we don't have any data yet to back us up, but it is a message that should resonate with our key audiences. So yes, we are doing that. We need to do more of it.
Okay.
Thank you all. We will have an email out to you before the end of the day. Thank you.
Thank you.